coming at you live from the heart of Lincoln, America. This is Old School, sponsored by the Mercado by Certified Piedmontese, Nebraska Football Hall of Famer Jay Foreman and Austin Orman. Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back into this Old School 93.7 Ticket, ticketfm.com. Reliving the glory days of the Immaculate Grid. We're pulling some names.
Oh, I just got one. Played left field for only one team. Former Husker, Alex Gordon.
There we go.
2%.
Really?
I thought it would be a lot higher than that. I need to played left field for the Twins and played left field for the Mariners. But either way. Somebody called me Jake on the text line. That hurts my feelings.
Ooh, interesting.
Yeah.
But yes, they are correct in that the Royals championship run really changed the length of the starters. 23-20, Austin, come on. Bobby had a year nowhere close to the year of Cal or Judge. I was not arguing for Bobby to win MVP, even if Bobby is the MVP of my baseball heart. I'm just saying he should have finished in third. He should have been one of the top three finalists, which they announced. Mm-hmm. You know, he will finish fourth. I feel really confident about that. But that was just my point about how vibes-based it it gets.
It's market size, too.
Which, I mean, Cleveland, mistake by the lake, that's not a huge market. They're not spending anything. Royals at least are a little bit. But anyways, I just got to pound the table for my guy Bobby when I get a chance.
Yeah, of course.
Speaking of vibes, they were up in PBA last night.
They were.
Almost from the jump. Jess Petrie, the three-quarter court shot was pretty incredible. Nebraska women's basketball romps over Creighton. We mentioned it a little bit before, Nick. Not the same Creighton team of years past. They're certainly rebuilding.
Yeah.
But even in that context, Nebraska women's basketball wins by 34. And if you're a good team and a team's a bad team, you find a way to not just beat them, but you beat them pretty bad. My eyes are open a little bit for this Nebraska women's basketball team, especially on the heels of another incredible signing day where you get the third five-star in program history to commit and a couple four-stars as well.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's all going to come together, but maybe this is the start of the run for Amy Williams.
Well, I think it needs to be. You're coming off the heels of a very successful career for Alexis Markowski. Successful individual career for Alexis Markowski. You're able to glide that, I would say, and also overlap that with a five-star, really exciting player in Britt Prince. And now you're going to have potentially going into the next one of Ashlyn Copel, who's the five-star that they signed yesterday from South Dakota. You talk about just the ability to – that overlap is huge, I think. And when you're able to blend the leadership and the growth, and it allows a player like Britt Prince maybe this year, last year, to come in, play a very prominent role on this team. Hit some big shots down the stretch and not require her to be the number one focus, I think is massively important and beneficial for the development. And it's going to be the same for Ashlyn Copel.
It's hard to say it's a make or break year. Amy Williams has been pretty darn successful in her tenure at Nebraska, entering season 10 already at the helm of her alma mater. Man, think about the program that she inherited. I know it was bad toward the end of the Connie Yori era. Then Amy Williams comes in.
Yeah.
I'm a little surprised that Nebraska hasn't made even one run to the second weekend. It feels like that's the next step for this program, where it's almost in the same category for me, Nick, of Husker baseball. But at least, Husker women's basketball kind of knows who it is. They're going to play their two bigs. They have their style. They have their identity. And I'm curious to see if there really is a second gear for this program to reach. Because I think sooner than later, if you're able to have this identity and you're able to add talent to what it is you do well, we've seen that this program can go places. It's time for that next step.
It is. I mean, they were so close last year against Louisville. And I was down there in Fort Worth when they played Louisville and lost 63-58. I think that game changes dramatically, number one, if Britt Prince doesn't foul out with a couple of minutes left in the game. It was some really questionable fouls. And I'm not a blame the officials guy at all, but
you're a catcher. You have to sweet talk him.
Bingo. Yeah, right. But no, I think that ultimately the game does look a little different. This is going to be a team that I think this year they're going to get it inside with Jess. But I think more so than not, it's going to be very similar to the guys, where as long as they can shoot the three ball and the perimeter shot well, that's going to go and take them for how far as it can. I just think that there's a lot of, this is so cliche of somebody who covers the team to say, that there's incredible depth. Like, you look at the at some of these positions, and Jim mentioned it on the text line, and I was going to get to it. You had notable players that aren't playing. Like, Allison Widener's taken a redshirt year this year and is going to come back next season as she continues to recover from the knee injury. But you had somebody like Logan Nisley, who might play fewer minutes this year than she did last year just because of the depth on this team. And she was in a boot last night, and Nebraska didn't skip a beat. And you have Kennedy Williams stepping up in these early parts of the season, where her best sport is softball, but she's still making an impact and providing some valuable time for the basketball team as a dual sport athlete. And then obviously you have players, Claire Johnson, and I mean, Natalie Potts is on the bench well, yeah. But Claire Johnson. And obviously, you know, you go and you look at the transfers, and it's Haley Weaver from Northwestern, and
started all three games.
Yeah. It's just there's a lot of different options. But Austin, I say this, and maybe we can transition into the men's basketball conversation with this, of like, too many options also can be a bad thing, because it for Nebraska basketball, men's on the men's side, by Saturday, you kind of have to have some roles defined. And there's a couple that might get left out, surprisingly, that I want to talk about. But same thing for the women. Not as much as soon, but really mid-December, when you start to play the USCs of the world and stuff like that, the conference games, you need to have the roles clearly defined for what's healthy at that moment. Too many cooks in the kitchen can provide a little bit of struggle as well.
100% agree. I even said that for football, which is why I really liked the UCLA game plan. You had four guys with catches, and they all made sense. You had one guy get the lion's share of the touches. Depth is a strength until it holds you back. Like anything, it's good in moderation. And Nick, this Nebraska men's basketball team is nowhere close to figuring out that rotation. They still have a lot of guys I think they want to get eyes on and get minutes for. But I think that's going to be fascinating to monitor really over the course of the next 8 days, which I think is the first most important stretch of the season for this team. Neutral site game closer for you than it is for Oklahoma, a team that's the first high major team that Nebraska will have played. Essentially, Oklahoma is as good as Maryland Eastern Shore was bad. If you look at their simple rating score on basketball reference, Oklahoma is a plus 12 and Maryland Eastern Shore was a minus 14. A tournament team last year, brand new team, so factor a lot of that in and out. An Oklahoma team that's going to have advantages in terms of getting downhill, in terms of rebounding. Can Nebraska make up for that with its shooting? This is where I think the depth comes in handy for Nebraska.
Gotcha.
Is that if you start off slow, you have options to pull in off the bench. Nebraska did not start well against St. Mary's last year. Then Bryce Williams got going a little bit. I think Connor Seagen got going a little bit. And he wasn't, I think maybe that was a game Connor had a spot start in. I forget off the top of my head. But in a game like this, you can still work through who's hot and who's not, like against St. Mary's. But then you go from Oklahoma down to Kansas City to take on a brand new New Mexico team that I think is probably the most favorable first round draw Nebraska could get in this MTE. But again, still a tournament team last year or borderline close to it.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
And then you could either Kansas State or Mississippi State. Mississippi State's a top 30 team in KenPom. Kansas State, a little bit ahead of Nebraska, you know, borderline top 50, mid-40s type of team. These next 8 days will not and cannot determine the entirety of Nebraska's schedule, given that they play in the Big Ten. You can always make up ground in this conference.
Yeah.
But man, what a way to send a fantastic first impression. If Nebraska, 3-0 is going to be difficult, but if Nebraska can go 2-1 in these next three, that is a huge step in the right direction for a team that pretty much every major, you know, bracketology site that's already doing it this early has Nebraska firmly on the bubble.
I know you don't want to look too far ahead, but man, Austin, I mean, even if you can go, if you can go 3-0, you're talking about more than likely 8-0 overall going into that Creighton game, and that's the first massive test for you. Mm-hmm. I think we're going to have a lot of the same opinions going into a lot of these games against other Division I teams. It might not be as athletic as the opponent, right? Might not be able to. It's going to come down to shooting ability. I looked back at that St. Mary's loss last year. Nebraska lost 77-74 to the Gaels. It was a game where, as a team, they shot 5 of 17 from beyond the three-point line.
And I think they had most of their makes in one like late first-half flurry.
Yeah.
Or early second half.
They shot, I think you're right. In the first half, they shot 3 of 10 from the three-point line in the first half, 2 of 7 from the three-point line in the second half. I think, number one, the volume of three-point shots is going to be dramatically higher than that this week. Mm-hmm. I think that the makes as well. I was encouraged to see in the game against FIU on Saturday, Price Sanford. Like, that is why you bring him in. He had a spell, and you probably know the specific sequence that I'm talking about, but there was a span. I'm just going to throw a number, like 14 points in the matter of like a minute of game time.
It was 8 points in the span of 28 seconds.
Okay, perfect. Thank you.
It was a three-pointer.
Yeah.
It was a transition layup of some sort off of a broken possession.
There's a trailer, right?
And then the trail one was Sam gets the steal on the inbound, dribbles in the middle of the court, flips it back to Price, 8 points, 28 seconds, and Nebraska's really off.
Yeah, and like those are the types that, number one, that's why you bring in Price, is the ability to, not necessarily to score 8 points in 28 seconds, but it's the three-point ability. It's the three-point ability. I want to ask you, because I've been asked a lot when I've been at the game about him, Kendall Blue. What is the role for, and maybe we don't know, and that's okay if that's an acceptable answer. I think that there were a lot of us, myself included, that maybe saw more playing time in the future, in the near future, for Kendall Blue. And he just, number one, hasn't been given a whole lot of opportunities, which is telling in its own right. And when he has gotten in, it's looked real sloppy.
The factual answer, the speak on what we know answer is, I don't know.
Yeah.
Here's my read on that situation. I think Kendall Blue came in and is a guy that still needs to find a way to adjust to how physical this level is consistently, which is weird to say for a guy that came from a really high-level Summit League team in St. Thomas with good coaching, with solid talent around him. But this is faster, more consistently for him.
Mm-hmm.
My guess is that he's a little sped up on offense. He's a little unsure. He's a little hesitant on offense. Probably not the same, I'm that guy, as Bryce Williams. He did get knocked off his spot a little bit and didn't handle pressure great, but at least didn't back down. Kendall Blue against Florida International, what was really telling to me was, as the point guard, when you see Jamarcus Lawrence and Cale Jacobson and even Sam Hoiberg at times clear everyone else out to handle the ball, Kendall Blue either was unwilling to do that or unable to do that. Mm. For a guy who was brought in to be a bigger jumbo style point guard.
I like his size a lot.
That's why Nebraska got him, because they want that positional size. And I still think that he's maybe that skeleton key that can unlock everything for Nebraska. My guess is he's standing and watching a little bit too much on defense too, not fully involved with the scheme. But I think more than anything, it's between the ears for Kendall Blue, because he just looks listless. He looks like he's floating. It looks like he's just out there for Nebraska right now, which is not me writing him off, right? If he comes into his own toward the end of non-conference, into conference play, that goes so far for Nebraska. But he doesn't provide the energy and the defense that the Sam Hoiberg does. He doesn't provide the organizational skills that Cale Jacobson does. He doesn't provide the athleticism or consistent, you know, scoring pop or athleticism that Jamarcus Lawrence does.
Yeah.
He's a guy. That's it. He's just out there right now. So that's why I think that you haven't seen him a lot. Whereas the argument for a Sejan, you know, still coming off the bench is, okay, if Price Sanford is cold, at least we know Connor Sejan is going to get shots up. He's not going to lose confidence and he can get hot in a hurry. I still think the majority of a Sejan's minutes from last year go to Sanford, who I think is just a little bit taller, pretty much the same defender, gives you a little bit more in terms of ball handling, craft, creativity, which a Sejan, to his credit, has improved.
Yeah.
But I think Sanford's just about 5% better across the board than Connor Sejan. He's younger, a little bit taller as well, but there's still a role for Connor Sejan. But that's where you look at, you know, Kendall Blue as a senior. How did you get passed up by Braden Frager?
Yeah.
Is it the mentality? Is it as simple as that? Is there something to the year two transfer magic under Fred Hoiberg? And I know Frager's not a transfer, but it is still year two for him. having a year to learn the system, I'm sure helps. But Nebraska, I don't think will be able to achieve all of its goals without either consistent production from Braden Frager or Kendall Blue. Before the year, you thought the consistency would come from the senior who'd been around the college basketball block. Right now, it's looking like Frager's the safer bet.
Yeah, which is it's interesting. There's a lot of exciting pieces to this team. There's a lot of experience on this team, number one. I told you a while ago off air, it just feels like they are a team that might lose. It's going to be kind of a roller coaster where there might be some times where you go after a game and you say, man, they really should have beaten them. And on paper, they should have beaten them and they just don't. Mm-hmm. And then there's going to be a lot of games where they're going to somehow comfortably win against teams that you didn't think that they were going to even beat in the first place. It just feels like we're on the cusp of a roller coaster, ebbs and flows, just kind of hang on with them type of year.
The example that comes to mind for me, it's not going to be perfect, but just kind of work with me, right? Some people are going to say, well, Iowa's just right across the river.
Yeah.
I don't think that that's necessarily the right comparison for how Nebraska's playing. Nebraska won't play that fast. I think of some of those like mid-ish tenure Jay Wright teams at Villanova where, you know, oh, can a jump shooting team really win the championship? Yeah. Well, guess what? That was Villanova in 2016 and 2018. And that's, again, not where I'm trying to say Nebraska is. But even the few years before that, I mean, these Villanova teams that were winning mid-20s or more games would just forget how to put the ball in the basket for stretches. The first title team for Villanova wasn't immune to this. I'm going to scroll through their schedule here. I mean, they scored 55 points in a loss at a neutral site to Oklahoma. And that's a team that on the year averaged 78. You know, these nights happen where you get cold. Their next loss came on the road at Virginia, where they actually put up 75 mm-hmm. on Virginia, which is hard to do. Then you see, you scroll down, they win a game only putting up 72 against Seton Hall, 60 at Butler, 55 at Georgetown, 72 at Seton Hall, 68 on the road at St. John's for a team that you think of as an offensive juggernaut in the machine.
Yeah.
Nebraska's not even at that level. They're going to have these off nights, which is where surviving, you know, the first half really against West Georgia, surviving the last 8 minutes against Maryland Eastern Shore, and really, you know, the middle 8 minutes of the first half against Maryland Eastern Shore as well. But then you have to tell yourself, well, I mean, it's Maryland Eastern Shore, it's West Georgia. Yeah. It is going to come down to the threes. And to your point, when you have a team that's this reliant on variance, you just never know what night it's going to be against.
I know we're up against the clock, but one thing I will also add on to that is, I will say it is different than what Fred started out with, right? Where when Fred Hoiberg got here, he brought in as good of shooters as he probably could have brought in. And it was, mm-hmm. all right, we're going to ask these guys to shoot the lights out of the gym, knowing they're not the best shooters on the floor. Mm-hmm. This year, Nebraska has guys that can shoot, right? So you hope that the ebbs and flows, the roller coaster isn't so dramatic, right? Mm-hmm. It isn't so steep one way or the other. You hope it's a little more of a gradual kind of line. It's closer to linear, if you will, because you're asking them to do their strengths. It's just how consistent can they showcase their strengths?
Which is where I get what Fred Hoiberg was saying at his presser today. He doesn't understand and doesn't appreciate when his team's pace isn't good. Mm-hmm. That's not Nebraska, you know, getting 90 possession. That's not what he means. What Fred Hoiberg means more often than not when he says pace is, did my team take advantage of the opportunities it had in transition to get out? Mm-hmm. And in the half court setting, were guys standing around or were they moving? Nebraska stood around and looked out of place so consistently against Maryland Eastern Shore until they opened it up. That's when shots started falling. That has a little bit to do with athleticism. Nebraska will struggle against ball pressure teams offensively, and which is where you love the passing ability of Rink Mass, the basketball IQ to be able to back cut against pressure as that release valve. But the other way to beat pressure is you get one guy open, he hits his shot.
Yeah.
You just need him open for a split second. That's the bet that Nebraska is making right now. If they stand still, they're not going to beat anyone. They're not mm-hmm. St. John's where they can ISO and go one-on-one. They got to be in constant motion. They can do it deliberately as long as it's done intentionally. So
here we go. Saturday night, Big Ten Network, baby.
Big one.
Finally on TV.
Woo!
Finally.
Been a long time. Fun night in college hoops tonight, by the way. Hey. Purdue gets Trey Kaufman run back against Alabama.
Longest winning streak in the country.
resides right here in Lincoln, Nebraska.
Nebraska men's basketball.
7 games, folks. You only need to win 6 to win the tournament.
Back to Old School with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Here we are back to Old School on The Ticket. Austin Orman and Nick Sainert with you. Another 25 minutes or so. Do you have Thursday night football coming your way? We'll be out of here about 6:30 for that to start right here, 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com. One last thing on the Nebraska basketball conversation. Jesse says, may only need 6 to win the tournament, but may need to win 22 or 23 to get into the dance. I get where that number comes from, but if Nebraska plays its cards right, I really think you can get in with 20. Just being a Big Ten team. You know, that's where if you go 3-1 in that stretch of games that I mentioned, your Oklahoma, your MTE, and your Creighton, if you go 3-1 in those games, and probably if you go 8-2 at home and you can steal 3 Big Ten road wins, and that's 11 conference wins. It's, you know, 1 or 2 decent neutral wins and potentially a home win over Creighton as well. It wouldn't probably be single digit seed worthy, but you'd be, you know, maybe 9, probably in that 10 range.
Remind me, Oregon got in, right?
Oregon was it. Yep.
Did Indiana?
Indiana did not.
That's what I thought. Okay. So
left on the cutting room floor for Bubba Cunningham's North Carolina Tar Heels.
So 8 Big Ten teams made it last year.
It was Purdue.
Oh, this is fun.
Illinois.
Yep.
Okay, let me think here. Michigan got in.
Yep.
Purdue, Illinois, Michigan State.
Yep.
You're talking then about, you already mentioned Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon was in, okay, let me think through it. I know these don't.
You're missing 2.
Trying to think through the top. Oh, Wisconsin made it.
Yep. And one had their coach leave.
Yeah, and then it was Maryland.
That's right.
With Derek Queen.
Maryland. Mm-hmm. So you asked me that question during the break of how many, hypothetically speaking, Big Ten wins do you need? I said 11, and that's if you lose a couple of non-cons. That would be right on pace for sneaking in. Now, it's also important to remind listeners that everybody makes the Big Ten tournament this year.
Mm-hmm. On the men's side, not on the women's side.
On the men's side. Yes, on the men's side it does. So, you know, it's miraculous. Nebraska finished 21-14 last year. Didn't make the Big Ten tournament.
Well, they finished 17-14 in the regular season.
That's right. That's right. That's right.
5-game losing streak.
Thank you. That's right. I forgot about the crown. How could I forget about the crown?
That the crown is seared.
Yeah.
Seared onto my brain.
Vegas is seared into your mind. But no, I think, you know, if you are around that 11-12 win mark, you're pretty comfortable. Because I think you're better than half the conference. I think you just have to be better than half the conference.
Yeah. I mean, now Nebraska's gone 13-5 and not made it in. Different beast of the Big Ten. We do want to spend some time here with some college football topics as well as we were brainstorming ideas for the show. We're making our picks, making our calls right now in mid-November. A couple weeks left in the regular season, few weeks left. Where do some high-profile coaches go? Whether it's to a job in coaching, a job in media, working a regular 9-to-5, whatever it is. Nick, we'll start with James Franklin.
Yeah.
Right now, what's your vibe?
I know we both agree on this one. It's Virginia Tech.
Yeah. They need him. He needs them.
I think it fits well. Mm-hmm. A team that needs a little bit of juice, good defensively, run the ball, kind of just gut it out type of team. Not going to be super flashy. We'll bring enough juice and enough cachet to move the needle a little bit. I think James Franklin's the dude.
Brian Kelly.
Oh man, this is hard because I don't know if there's a job right now that he would take. Do you think there is? Is Florida the one?
Florida's not going to touch him after everything at LSU.
No.
Someone suggested Michigan State. I think he'd be better there than UCLA.
Sure.
Probably. But I also don't think Jonathan Smith has been that bad at Michigan State.
I don't think it's been that bad this soon. I don't either. I said the same thing this morning on the air. I don't feel like Jonathan Smith has been given a fair run, number one. Number two, I think that there's a lot of other things wrong with Michigan State more than just their head football coach.
Yeah.
And you can't argue that he hasn't tried to fix things either. He's benching his like guy that he's tied at the hip with, and Aiden Childs.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. Pat Fitzgerald.
Wisconsin. Oh, that can't be Wisconsin.
Can't be Wisconsin.
I think he comes in as a coordinator somewhere, and he ends up becoming Wisconsin's head coach next year, or in 2 years.
Interesting.
Or he's everybody's like Kirk Ferentz thing.
I love the idea of Stanford head coach Pat Fitzgerald.
That, but it just doesn't feel like, I don't know. It just feels like he's a Big Ten guy.
Yes.
So then is it Stanford for a year and then it's either Iowa or Wisconsin?
Who's more likely to take over at Iowa, Pat Fitzgerald or Brett Bielema?
I think it's Pat Fitzgerald. Okay, so that's another conversation, the whole Brett Bielema thing. Illinois has dramatically underperformed this year.
Yes, with a caveat.
Tough schedule.
Tough schedule. Bill Connolly had them as one of their teams to watch for regression, where they might be just as good.
Mm-hmm.
But they won a lot of close games last year. Now they got the one over USC this year.
Yep.
You lost some NFL talent. And not for nothing, right? We talk about Nebraska men's basketball, back-to-back 20-win years, you know, back-to-back postseasons. Illinois is going bowling again. So, yeah. No, they weren't the college football playoff contender we thought they were coming into the year. But for that school's standards, even if it is a step back in the short term, yeah, it's still a step forward in the long term.
Okay. Okay. That's fine. I wonder what the future looks like, though, with a couple of those pieces gone.
Sure.
Most notably, sure. Luke Altmyer. Like, what are they going to do? Are they a transfer quarterback destination?
Not unless there's a Chicago kid, I would think. So.
It doesn't feel like it. So, and that's priority number one. You got to get your quarterback right.
But they got Altmyer out of the portal. That was a Bielema thing. A Bielema guy.
But it also felt like Altmyer was dramatically worse when he came from Ole Miss.
See, I didn't think he was that good when he came from Ole Miss.
That's what I'm saying. Dramatically worse when he was coming from Ole Miss.
So Illinois did the smart thing. They did the Big Ten thing. Found a damage good.
Sure.
And improved him.
Yeah.
I'll give him credit for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I give him credit. By no means am I saying move on from Brett Bielema.
Yeah. No.
But
for Bielema, long term, is that the spot for you? That's the question.
I don't know. That's where it's just like, Illinois and those types of programs. Now, Cignetti's made Indiana one of them.
Yeah.
But like Illinois and Purdue and
Maryland,
I guess you would call them stair-stepper jobs. Like, are any of those places long-term jobs for some of these coaches nowadays? I just don't think so. It's everything's so transactional that you just sit there and go, okay, I'm good with just, you know, be here for 4 years, do my thing, win some games, and then go somewhere else. Even if it's to another stair-stepper job. Like, I think we're going to start to see, the perfect example would be like David Braun. Now, David Braun, I think I've said this publicly. It won't happen. But I think the best thing for David Braun's coaching career would be to get out of Northwestern. He won't.
Of his own accord.
Yes. Yeah. He won't because it's a Big Ten job and you don't leave a Big Ten job on your own, right? But like I brought up Virginia Tech, or if like Duke came open for David Braun,
yeah.
Like I look at those and I go, yeah, that'd probably be better for his development as a coach, right? He's still a new enough head coach to where if he left or if he got fired or whatever it was and went somewhere else and won a decent number of games, he would be able to still get a job somewhere else. I just look at it like Northwestern's so tough to win. But now I guess you're going to get an influx of cash, as we talked about to start the show, right. Full circle, influx of cash, and you're going to get new facilities here in a couple of years. New stadium.
Man.
Maybe Northwestern is a place.
It's going to be a really nice stadium.
Yeah, that they're not going to fill.
Care enough.
Yeah, they're not going to fill the stadium.
But not right away. But if you think the administration has a plan to get there.
Okay, do they have a plan to get there, and do they have the run? Are they going to give them the runway necessary?
Right.
That's the difference.
Mike Gundy, is he coaching next year?
No.
Billy Napier.
Yeah, I think I could see Napier going to like when Ryan Silverfield leaves Memphis. I see Napier going to like a job like that.
I could see it.
He did really well at Louisiana Lafayette.
Tulane?
Okay, potentially. Yeah. Yeah. Tulane.
So where does Summerall go?
Is he an Arkansas guy?
Kind of feels like it comes down to Arkansas or Kentucky, no?
And I don't know. Yeah, I guess so.
And Kentucky's not open yet. Mark Stoops is still there.
Yeah, he was obviously one of the initial names for every job that's been open. I don't think he fits LSU. I don't think he's flashy enough for LSU. I just don't. I don't think LSU views it as they're. I think LSU thinks that they're above getting a Group of Five head coach.
Really weird stance to take, but I believe it, especially for a place that hasn't necessarily done well with flash.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Saban wasn't flash. Les Miles wasn't flash.
No.
Ed O wasn't flash.
No. But they all came from notable places.
They did.
And I think that when you look at Summerall, I think Arkansas, I mean, Arkansas was a place we got to remember, different leadership, obviously, but it was a place where they went after the Georgia offensive line coach and made him their head coach.
Yeah.
And Sam Pittman. And so I don't think they're too concerned about potentially, you know, trying to take a shot on somebody. And that would certainly be much more of a comfortable and more traditional move to move a Group of Five head coach into a lower level SEC job.
Mm-hmm.
I'll say this. I like Fayetteville. I like the stadium a lot. I think Baum Walker, or not Baum Walker. Yeah, it is Baum Walker, right?
That's baseball, isn't it?
Yeah, it is baseball. I can't remember. Yeah, Baum Walker is the baseball. I think it's just Baum Stadium. Anyway.
It is. Let's see here. Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium.
Okay, never mind. Donald W. Reynolds Razorback Stadium. What a horrible name. It just doesn't roll off the tongue. But anyway.
It's called the Don.
The Don. Be careful nowadays. Anyway. Sorry. But anyway.
You know that.
I knew what you meant. We're going down a different road. Anyway. So, no, I think it's cool. If you haven't been down there, the corporate Walmart area is in Bentonville on the way down to Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. You drive past it. And you can pull up. There's a nice little Walmart neighborhood Walmart right by the stadium. You walk up, and it's open air on one end. It's opened. So it's just, there's no fence. You just look into the stadium. It's pretty sweet being able to see it. But no, yeah. I think that's more realistic than anything.
I would see Silverfield to Arkansas.
Okay.
I also don't hate the idea of Eric Morris to Oklahoma State.
Mm-hmm.
Although there's been some Zach Robinson Falcons OC chatter. He goes back home.
I just think that's Colin Klein's job to lose.
Probably. Which is weird. We haven't heard his name a lot. I know we talked about that on the drive a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
Man, that's weird for a guy that's right there. Yeah. Other names I think to throw out there. Is Hugh Freeze doing anything this time next year?
Media.
Ooh, I don't know if he's a media. I think he wants to be, but he strikes me as like a McAfee Barstool media, more so than studio guy.
Everybody's favorite nowadays.
Mike Loxley? Is he back?
Not as a head coach.
Think he's like an associate head coach somewhere?
I can see him being an assistant. DC somewhere?
Yeah.
Was he an offensive coordinator? No, I'm thinking Mel Tucker was the defensive coordinator at Georgia because we talked about Mel this morning. Loxley came from Georgia, right?
He was an Alabama guy.
Man, this is really bad on me.
Yeah, he was. Here we go. We got it pulled up here. All right, Mike Loxley was at Maryland from 2012 to 2015 as the OC and quarterbacks coach, the interim in 05. He was an analyst, co-OC and wide receivers coach in 2017 at Bama, Alabama's OC in 2018, and that's been at Maryland.
That's what it was. So is he an offensive coordinator somewhere? I don't know. You know what other name I'm surprised we haven't heard potentially be for a head coaching job somewhere? Is
Will Stein?
No. Well, that's... Yes.
Okay,
this one's going to surprise you.
Wait.
He's a coordinator in an SEC school right now. And maybe this year is going to maybe jet propel him into next year being on the conversation.
Missouri OC?
No.
No. I give up.
Ryan Grubb.
Ah.
I'm surprised we haven't. I'm surprised because, I mean, this is a guy that called plays in the national championship game, followed him to Alabama. Maybe had a little bit of a down year last year, sure, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Has kind of bounced back this year. Alabama's offense is really good. I see him being a Group of Five replacement.
Sure. Yeah.
Like on the Billy Napier field.
Yeah, I see that. Big Bank Hank, how is Arkansas not a power yet? All that Walmart money. Hey, guess what? Go listen to segment one of the show.
Well, Walmart money and Tyson Foods. I mean, yeah. And they just bought into basketball. Like, mm-hmm. I think that they maybe looked at, this is the conversation I think donors have to have nowadays is like, what's more gettable? And I wonder, like, okay, we can talk about Nebraska here. Like, I wonder if Nebraska's doing that. Like, what sport between football and men's basketball do they feel like in the national sense is more attainable or easily attainable? I think Nebraska leans football, and I think Arkansas leans men's basketball.
Yeah, probably.
Because I think Arkansas looks at the SEC and the football in the football world and goes, we're not going to be able to compete up at the top.
Mm-hmm.
So, but in basketball, we can, especially with a guy like John Calipari at the top. And then
which he's seven years.
Yeah, fine. Yeah. He's also fine right now.
Yeah.
Like they lost to Michigan State at in East Lansing and stuff. But I think then Nebraska looks at it and goes, all right, what's more attainable, right? Getting into a 12 team playoff and just giving ourselves a shot. Or really making waves in the field of 64. And I think they'd look at it and say football. And that's fine, right? To each their own. You got to identify that.
I would tell Nebraska not to give up the big picture for something short-sighted and go away from football.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to stick with that. Also, trivia before we go to break. Who is the visiting team at the Breslin Center tonight?
I could not tell you.
The man returns to the place of his biggest road victory at Nebraska. Tim Miles
in
the San Jose State Spartans.
I thought he went to I thought they played at Colorado State tonight.
Not tonight.
Gotcha.
Nope. Big Bag Hank, we love you. We know you're a longtime listener. I was not trying to give you grief. I'm just saying we don't have enough time.
Austin, that was kind of aggressive.
It was. It was more a suggestion to go back.
Did you say it and then go, ooh, maybe I shouldn't have said that?
No, I knew what I meant. I just knew it also came out. Not the way I intended it, but yes, please, Big Bang Hank, if you have the time now that you're off of work, you know you're a hardworking man, I would suggest you go back and listen to the first segment of the show where we talked about this very concept.
Don't look up the San Jose State score.
Yeah, it's probably pretty bad.
16-2 with 12 minutes to go in the first half.
Hail Sparty. Wrong one. The green and white Spartans.
11:57 to go in the first half. Michigan State leads 10 miles, 16-2. San Jose State 0-2 this year.
Back to old school with Foreman and Orman on 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
A very brief final segment here on Old School, brought to you as always by the Mercado by Certified Piedmont. He's Austin Orman and Nick Sainer. Nick, thank you for filling in. I appreciate
absolutely.
It. Maybe a one segment cameo or 1 hour cameo tomorrow.
Indeed.
Around lunchtime.
Indeed.
Stay tuned for that. Always goes too quick. But appreciate everyone listening and staying tuned here on our Sartor Hamann Jewelers text line. Thursday night football again coming up here on The Ticket in just about half an hour. Jets versus Patriots.
Oh, and what an intriguing game.
It is at the Patriots, so you certainly lean heavy to New England in this one. AFC playoff picture. Mm. Kind of wild. It's like it's 2010 again or 2006 again with the Patriots, the Steelers, the Colts and the Broncos. Of course, leading their divisions. I'm most surprised by the Steelers. And now, granted, the Colts, we've had those conversations before. Denver's had some talent. Drake May seems to be legit. But I didn't realize Aaron Rodgers' numbers, you know, these last couple of years, actually surprisingly decent. Shout out to Pittsburgh. Now, probably still a wild card team, but good for them. They're relevant, playing some good football.
Well, and they've done enough, right? Like, that's the kind of the key to it. Aaron Rodgers has done enough towards the back end of his career. There's so much off the field stuff that's kind of been consuming the Aaron Rodgers saga. Pittsburgh's just done enough, and it continues to show Mike Tomlin, I think, it just how valuable he is. The conversation of Mike Tomlin potentially coaching any other team than the Steelers is so crazy to me, but sometimes you like a fresh start, so we'll see what the future holds.
Jets cover 12.5 tonight?
12.5 is a lot in the NFL.
It really is.
I think I'm going to say no. I think the Patriots win by 14.
There you have it. Under 43.5, New England favored by 12.
I just picked up Travion Henderson on my fantasy team. I hate fantasy football. Just picked him up, though. We'll see. Vrabel, give him the ball.
Give that man the rock.
Ramondre's had his chance.
He has.
Give it to Travion.
It's over. Travion Henderson's time. For Nick Sainer, I'm Austin Orman. Don't go anywhere. Plenty more coming your way. Take a weeknight and Thursday night football.